flatmates Viago, Deacon, and Vladislav are three vampires who are just trying to get by in modern society, from paying rent and doing housework to trying to get invited into nightclubs. They're just like anyone else, except they're immortal and must feast on human blood. When their 8,000-year-old roommate Peter turns 20-something human hipster Nick into a vampire, the guys must show him the ropes and guide him through his newfound eternal life. And in return, they are forced to learn a thing or two about modern society, fashions, technology, and the internet. But it's the introduction of Nick's human friend, Stu, that really changes the vampires' lives and attitudes towards the ever-changing world around them. When Stu's life is threatened, the vamps show us that maybe humans are worth fighting for, and that even though your heart may be cold and dead, it doesn't mean you have no feelings.
That's a pretty good plot summary, yeah.
That's what is available on the electronic press kit.
Is it? Ah, right, okay. That's very good.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of Commode recently, mainly because of the Simon Mayo interviews I really like, and because we've got some guests coming up. I'm trying to get some interviewing styles and less nervous when talking to people in the industry and stuff like that. But he goes through things, what he hates in press releases, if anything contains journey and stuff like that. Like certain words he's like, you should play bingo with if they're present in the press notes. That's quite good. I like that.
Drinking game.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it'd be good. I'll see if I can create. I'll create one because I'll listen to it. He talks about it at length, so I'll find out what they are. And we can have a drinking game if we find press notes for other films this year.
So, was it your first time?
Oh, we should say that this is the this episode is What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes, the film.
Yes, not the short. Mm. The feature film.
Yes, it was the first time I'd seen it. A few weeks ago?
Yeah, we were in Dunfermline after coming back from holiday in Berlin. And, you know, as when they started January, you haven't gone back to work yet. You're like, oh, let's watch a movie. Just scouring through Amazon. And I was like, I'm sure we've mentioned this before, What We Do in the Shadows. Because we mentioned it in Nosferatu, probably. It's where it first came up. And then again in For Ragnarok, probably again it came up. And I was like, oh yeah, that's the thing that Taika Waititi did before For Ragnarok. So we watched it, only about 90-odd minutes. Excellent. Excellent movie. It was really super enjoyable. It was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great.
I watched it like 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I don't remember what was the prompt to get me to see that, but I just realized, because I watched it again yesterday, twice in a row, after watching it the first time in the original Wellingtonian language, and doing some research, the French version is not really a dubbing. It's more a French original version.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept the story, but they added plenty of stuff. It's really an original piece of work, actually.
Huh.
Yeah. So Taika Waititi plays Viago, Emmerich in the French version. Bruno Laven is doing the French version. Jermaine Clement is doing Vladislav. Geoffroy in the French version, and is voiced by Alexandre Astier. I'll talk about him in a second. Jonathan Breux is doing Deacon, Miguel in the French version, and dubbed by Fred Testo. Corey Gonzalez-Macquer is doing Nick, or JC in the French version, voiced by Bruno Salomon. And Stuart Rutherford is doing Stu, Gilles in French version, and Nicolas Charlie is dubbing him. So basically, we have not necessarily a tradition, but in France, there is a movie called La Classe Américaine, which is, it's been done a while back, something like in the 80s, and a couple of people took, filmmakers took some old movie footage, and a bit like They Shall Not Grow Old, except that it was comedy.
Okay,
They took plenty, like dozens of different American movies, and they created a story with that footage and with the original voices of the actors that voiced the guys in the original French versions. And there was this one, and I just discovered yesterday while discovering the French version, there is the two, it's not brothers, but it's the Nicolas and Bruno, who are two of the guys dubbing there, I just said. They've been doing that kind of stuff for a while on television, and their latest project was doing that original version, that French original version. And for once, the voices, they have kind of the same tone. It sounds, it's been respected, except probably Vladislav that you don't have that Russian touch,
right?
But the hello everyone, like
the
joy and the essence is in all of those.
So is this a common thing then, or is this quite unusual for? Because I know obviously every language you dub it, you know, and you watch it, and it's actually just the words as opposed to the actors are different. Like if you watch a film that's obviously filmed in a different language to your own, and then you put your own dubbed language on it, the sound doesn't match the movement of the mouth.
Yeah.
So is this style, as you're talking about here, is this unusual for, or is this a common thing in France?
No, it's unusual. Usually the only things that are, because it's not translated, is always adapted, right?
Right, yeah.
But it's, this one we would say was like very loosely adapted. Usually they only try to transpose the jokes, which won't work. Like you make like a tree and leaf, that won't work in France. So they took something military, something they adapted.
Right.
Or in Scream, first you leave her alone, that won't work in France. Obviously you have to change the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So usually that's the only thing. And now the titles are being changed again. Sometimes they keep the original title. What We Do in the Shadows became Vampire en toute intimité, which is let's get real with some vampires. Let's go. We'll see those vampires in their daily life kind of approach in the title. The original short was 2005 and actually was called What We Do in the Shadows, Interviews with Some Vampires.
Yeah, I watched it last night. It's like in the first 2 minutes they go, it's the Jamin Clement's character, or Vladislav. He's talking about what they do. It's like, oh, we do this, and we're like normal people, but we do this in the shadows, we do that. And it's like, what do we do in the shadows? So like, we go shopping in the shadows, like stuff like that. Like, that's where the title comes from.
This was certified 15 in the UK.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
It's not actually that graphic at all, really.
No.
It reminded me in a way of Blair Witch, when with the whole sequences in the house when they're like chasing down their victims. I was getting a Blair Witch sort of esque flashback, which makes sense because both of those films are like the handheld footage style of film.
Mm-hmm.
It does credit to this movie that you kind of forget that it's hand. Well, it's not even because handheld footage usually is one of the protagonists holding the camera. And this one, it's the documentary crew. The titles at the beginning of the film say these vampires allowed access to these documentary filmmakers. They were equipped with crucifixes and cameras. I mean, that's quite good. But yeah, the whole style of filmmaking is really nice in this.
The short is also available on YouTube. You just type What We Do in the Shadows original short film and you'll find that. It was made for around $1.6 million and got 6.9.
Oh.
I didn't check if it's New Zealand dollars or US dollars, but I guess it's US dollars.
Usually,
because I think I saw that on Wikipedia, and I think that's usually in US dollars immediately.
To pick up a point that we made last year in a lot of episodes, a film needs to make double its budget back to be considered a success. So if it makes its budget back, it's still not really a success, because if you make back your marketing, you have to make double the budget back.
You need a profit. Like any business is making a profit, and any film would want to make a profit. So.
Which is double the budget.
Yeah, yeah.
To get above the, so to make this, money back.
This was a, especially because in terms of filmmaking, $1 million is not a huge budget to have. So for something with a small budget to then make $5 million more than the budget is amazing.
Mm.
And obviously cut, you know, hit a chord with lots of the audience.
I feel
rightly so.
So Jan, you said you saw this about 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So when does this come out? The original release date?
Well, okay, so the shooting took place over 5 weeks, starting in September 2012.
Right.
And it completed in August 2013 after a week of pickups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw it a bit after that then, but it was actually entirely improvised around a script that Taika and Jermaine had written,
but
didn't show to the cast. And because of the random and often prolonged nature of the improvised takes, the guys came away with about 125 hours of footage, from which they needed to do the story, the 90-minute story, obviously.
Yeah. So is this just after Twilight then? Do you remember when Twilight came out, the movies?
No.
Did you see them? You said you read the book though, right?
I read the books, yeah.
You never saw the films?
I saw the films, I just don't know when they came out, because I hated them.
I think they were they not the end of the 2000s?
Probably.
Because that's what I'm wondering.
I mean, we can look it up.
Yeah, that may be a good idea.
2000, there was also a year of post and VFX being processed into the thing, so 2014 was when it was released.
2008, the first Twilight came out.
Right, so they come out for about 5 years or so much. So this is just after Twilight, which is interesting, because obviously that was when we had the resurgence of vampires, but vampires were, you know, not seen as Nosferatu and Dracula. They were, you know, more Deacon's character.
I think it's interesting because it depends on what you mean by resurgence, because I think we've always had an obsession with vampires and things that are kind of, I don't know, otherworldly and supernatural. It's kind of like saying that we had a resurgence of superheroes now because of the Marvel world and the cinematic experiences that are all new. Wait, I haven't finished. But since Bram Stoker's Dracula and, of course, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, since then we've kind of had a total obsession with vampires. There's always been, like, Interview with a Vampire, Dracula, all of the Draculas, Nosferatu. And then you have things like this that are kind of comedic, so they're not as serious as Nosferatu and the 1992 Dracula.
All I meant by this was the idea, you know, when it happened with Harry Potter, for example, when Harry Potter, the final 6, 7 and 8, Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, when they made them two parts, loads of other films started doing two parts. It's the same with when Game of Thrones was successful, you get films like Snow White and the Huntsman, or even with Gods of Egypt and all these sort of, like, you know, medieval kings, monsters sort of thing. So what I mean in the sense of resurgence with vampires, I mean that because something had such a critical success with vampires, 9 times out of 10, studios go, what's all the vampire scripts we've got in the back room that we've made that we can put out because people like vampires right now? That's all I meant. I mean, I know vampires have been around forever. I just mean that in the mainstream appeal, do you think that also helped when they put the film out? They're like, right, okay, so we've just had this massive craze of this type of vampire. Let's bring out this because people like vampires, so it might work as well. That's all I meant.
It might be why it was given a $1 million budget.
Mm.
But I just mean that in popular media, maybe there was a resurgence, but kind of the underworld, if you want to call it that, have always had an obsession.
Yeah,
with.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, subject that is in the mind and then crosses in media, like Armageddon and Deep Impact were released in the same year.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's curious you say the original was 2005, because that is just after The Office, the UK version, which really takes that style of mockumentary, crash realism, which this film definitely has. You get a lot of the original Office. I haven't seen the American one, so it might have a bit of that. I'm not too sure, but I know it definitely has that.
There's the French one I realised yesterday.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, really?
One season, yeah.
I've also watched recently, I don't know why, because you get stuck in a rabbit hole of YouTube, like, what The Office is inspired by, like Airplane and all these. Jan's seen it as well. I've seen Jan watch a couple of times. These like documentaries that are in an airport and it's like real people's lives and it sort of makes celebrities out of human, like regular working people. So it kind of has that sort of feel to it, which is really nice. And also because Vladislav is one of the Flight of the Conchords guys, also has that very comedic feel of New Zealand humour as well. So it's got a bit of everything. If you're into the UK Office, for sure you'll enjoy this film. Because it's really, really well done, I think.
Yeah.
That whole style, it doesn't make a big deal out of this style. Like, you know how, so, like, for example, Cloverfield had this whole thing where people would run up to the camera going, what's going on? We need to get out of here. Like, that sort of thing. This has it, and it uses it in certain moments, like, as I said, with the Blair Witch sort of style in the house, is most when you realise, oh, this camera really works for this. But other times, it doesn't make itself, like, a gimmick. It's there for a filmmaker's purpose, which is really nice to see.
I think it, you know, when you watch a film and you don't know where it's going to go, I think this was definitely that film where, like, you don't see the plot twist of the fact that the Beast was a woman that he was in love with, and they were in this fiery relationship. Like, I thought that was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, they're keeping everything like step by step, jelly bean.
Exactly.
Because the first time he mentions her, he's like, the last time I saw the beast, she was and ripped off my head or tried to rip off my arms or something like that, like causing bodily harm. And then with the reveal later on, you're like, oh my God, it's great.
Well, with all the, I also love the, all the kind of cuts to medieval drawings and tapestries and kind of, I don't know, pages in a book. It was just perfect, because then it almost made you feel like, for a second, oh, this could be real.
That also reminded me of, like, you know, if you watch like these, they call them like nature programs, where it's like they're talking of werewolves will be real or something like that, and they go, it's a guy interviewed that thinks, or let's take UFOs to pay respect to our friends across the pond on that one time I was abducted. Say if it's like people that are telling their story of the when they were abducted, and they'll be going, and then I saw a light, and it like flash, and it'll be like clippings of like a UFO and like newspaper reports of UFO sighting, like all these programs that do that sort of effect. It's that in the film as well, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think my favorite bit was when, I mean, the werewolves.
That whole section is brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Just because they were so serious and they were so deadpan, and being British, that's totally my humour. And just like how, like, oh, no, we don't swear. We don't swear.
Calm down.
We don't swear.
What's the code? Werewolves, not swearwolves. Werewolves, not swearwolves. Right, that's it. It was brilliant as well because you introduced me to Nosferatu. The whole plot in Dracula and Nosferatu with the werewolf. You know, the wolf that turns up and it's never mentioned again. And the werewolves were in this film. I was like, that's brilliant. Just the I know I'm reading far too much into that whole idea that there's werewolves and vampires, but the fact that they in the story, he's like survive. They talk about don't go outside. There's a wolf in the hills. And the fact that this film is a vampires with werewolves, it's just, I love that as well, like just tiny touches. I think the start of the film really, really hits the nail on the coffin. With the whole kind of introducing us to all the vampires, with Taika Waititi's character rising out of the coffin. I'm like, that's pretty good. And then we get like somebody hanging upside down. We get like the succubus sort of scene where he opens the door and it's like the romantic, like the vampires going at it. And then obviously with everyone's favorite character, Peter, being in like the crypt under the house. He's kind excellent.
Of been told to stay away from any human contact at all, because he's obviously a that's the homage to Nosferatu, because he looks exactly like Shrek's version.
Yeah, Max von Schreck. Yeah,
that's the old spelling of Peter. It's with a Y.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
I saw an interview where they were talking at New York Comic Con, when they're talking about where did you get the idea from. And it's Jermaine and Taika Waititi sort of like having a joke, like, we used to like do these vampire stand-up, like the joke was that one of them was like telling a joke, he's like, I'm a vampire doing a comedy set, and there'd be a guy in the audience going, you're rubbish, and he going, you've been coming to my gigs for 200 years to heckle me, like that's where the basis of the film starts, with them having jokes about vampires, and then it evolves into this documentary film. I thought that's great. Lovely.
At the time, if you were a vampire, not good. If you were a Nazi, not good at all. And if you were a Nazi vampire,
And it's the footage of like the guy in the corner, like the allies come to get him. It's like, oh dear. It's there's so many little gems in here when they're just like having like the interviews, which is what the original short kind of is, more or less. The sort of interview parts, which is really, it's really fun, because they get to have so much fun with these characters, just like, yeah, I'm a vampire, let's go for it.
From nothing to this, that's incredible world building.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And in such a short period of time, it was pretty genius.
It's a good move from the film as well to start off with a subject that gets you to believe that they're real people. Because the first thing they're doing is having a flat meeting about doing the dishes. That's the first issue in the film that they deal with.
Yeah.
And that's just a brilliant way to start off. Like,
I don't think you guys are pulling your weight in the flat.
when we turned it on and it was like they were talking about there was a festival for vampires, I'm like, all right, so it's people that think they're vampires. And then you get into the film, it's like, oh no, these are genuine vampires. These this are is genuine great.
Vampires, yeah. And it's funny as well because they're all really old in terms of like 300 years old, and they don't know how to kill people.
Oh yeah, they're still
acting like they're teenagers. Like they have no idea. Like, oh, I sadly nicked her carotid artery. It's like, how do you not know how to do this?
Yeah,
like, yeah,
it's a bit messy in there.
Yeah,
Viago is a bit like, yeah, oh, I would like to travel and everything. You see the face of Viago, yeah. Okay,
yeah. Oh dear, the fact that there's like, yeah, I came to Australia chasing after a woman. It took me like 90 years to get here, or something like that.
So sweet.
Oh, it's so good. Just all
they end
it.
Up together anyway, which is so sweet.
Cradle snatcher.
Oh, that's one of the great, at the end of the film, it's like people can talk about the age gap. I mean, what's a 90-year-old doing with a 393-year-old man? They can call me cradle snatcher for all you like. I don't care. It's like, that's pretty good.
It's brilliant. It's the thing, they always switch things on their head.
I mean, the best rule for improv is you don't say no is the basic one, but the other one of like you believe everything that's going on, you commit to the world that you're in.
There is always a great balance in all the lines. It starts in a way and you end up like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Mm.
Almost every line, which is, yeah, that's quite impressive.
I mean, the thing with vampires as well is that because they're like trying to convince you that they're human, you get this realm of like, you get the fun of saying a real line and then throwing anything on the end of it. You could literally say anything you want and it's believable because, you know, vampires having that it's like in the comedy idea of if we were doing a comedy skit with us living in the flat, it'd be like Jan, because English is not his native language, like starting a sentence and then going on another tangent another way. It just works because they're trying to be human as opposed to, you know, to be vampires, which I really like.
Yeah, yeah.
Which works for a comedy film. I don't know why it's taken so long to have a comedy like vampire movie. And lesbian vampire slayers doesn't count, by the way.
We did, and sometimes some stuff are suggested that the coffin wanking was not really seen.
Oh, it's brilliant.
That's so funny.
So brilliant. I kind of saw it coming in terms of as soon as he shut the lid and the way that he was talking, it was kind of romantic and, oh, I'll never get to see her. And, oh, she was married. I feel like so happy for her. And then he sticks her photo up. As soon as the lid closed, I was like, oh, I know what's coming. And then it did. And I was like, actually, that's quite funny.
My first few words I used to have on this podcast, those hello, everyone, were clearly inspired by the one of the first few lines. Wake up, everyone.
His voice is so sweet. I love the fact that they've totally turned it on their head. Like, these vampires aren't scary at all. Like, there are moments where, of course, they are scary because they can kill you, but they are literally human.
Yeah.
And, you know, stupid sometimes and make the wrong decision and don't know how to feed themselves properly and accidentally kill people and don't know how to teach someone to become a vampire, even though they've been doing it for hundreds of years. Like, it's so good. I think the reason why we don't have that many comedic vampire films is because it's been romanticized so much.
Mm.
And so and because there's this whole vampire sex connection, this probably has been a problem with moving away from that, because I don't know, it's almost like, oh no, vampires are sexy. It's sex and funny can't go together.
Well, comedy as well is hard to write. And then when you throw the equation of you doing a vampire comedy, I mean, that's got to be difficult. But a lot of the jokes in the film are based in reality. Like, one of the best jokes in the film is at the very beginning of the film, and it's when the alarm goes off and it says 6. And you're like, oh, it's like 6 in the morning. And he gets up and goes, oh, it's getting, wake up everyone, it's 6 at night. And you're like,
of course it
brilliant,
is.
Brilliant, because it's 6 every films. We should start doing this, by the way. We should keep a tally of every time you see an alarm clock in a film, because I guarantee it's always a minute before the alarm's meant to go off.
Yeah.
Because that's a cliche. But unless it turns that on its head, going, oh, the joke is not that he's up late. He's literally up late.
Because he has to be. Yeah. I love as well how they haven't perfected anything. Like, that's my favourite bit of the film. Like, he still is scared to open the curtains just in case he bursts into flames. He's like, this is always the scariest part of my day, because he has to, like, really, like,
like in small increments open up the curtains just in case the sun is still there. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I can open the curtains.
I've just hypnotized the two cops, but I'm not very good at hypnotizing, so at any moment they can...
Oh, God.
They can't do anything right. It's like
a failed Jedi, like, you will not find anything here. No, we don't know yet, but...
It's more funny because, you know, when you think about senses of humour, and people go, oh, the British sense of humour, like slapstick, all that is funny. New Zealand sense of humour is hilarious.
Mm.
Because if you love that deadpan sort of thing, that's absolutely there. Because if you look at the comedy, the whole bit with the police is absolutely hilarious. It's so good because they're so concerned about health and safety. When he's going, hang on.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, they've seen it.
It's like the guy floating on the roof, but he's like, there's no smoke alarms in here either.
You've got no smoke alarms. Sorry, that's
Australian. New smoke alarms. I can't do an accent. I'm throwing away accents today.
That's Wellington Paranormal, I think it's called.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is the spin-off. And they talk about those guys, the police.
Oh, it's fantastic. People. All the stuff's great.
Really well done.
I also, it's kind of a balance of both, like, almost like in-betweeners was in a way of like, you know, this group of people that don't fit in anywhere, especially when they're like going out trying to find victims, because they don't go out for a night out, they go out to find victims, and they can only get in one place because they've got a restriction on vampire, they've got a good vampire policy, there's a guy that lets them in every time.
I mean, it's a joke on, again, the romanticism of vampires who own the clubs or own the whole underground world, like in True Blood, they kind of own all of these things and they're sexy and amazing and everyone wants to be them, and they glow in Twilight. And like, I've always been obsessed with vampires, actually. I'm still reading about vampires. I'm still reading a vampire book. Well, it's got demons and witches in too, but like...
For the fourth time, you're reading Discovery.
For the fourth time. I think, I don't know, there's something just, you know, the mysticism about it is amazing, especially because... These are people that have lived for decades and decades and centuries. Mm. And so they know so much. And so you can put an intellectual twist on it. And you can, in every conversation that you have that in these books or these films, you can learn about history and you can bring actual real life knowledge into it.
Mm.
And that's probably why it's so, because they can tell you things that you would never have experienced.
Mm.
And so I think it's really funny how in this film they've switched that up and made it like they're kind of stuck in where they first were vampires, and not in terms of courtship and being gentlemanly and chivalry, which quite a lot of vampire films have, just more in the fact that they don't get in anywhere because they don't know the fashion or they don't know how to speak to people because, you know, they're stuck in the 17th century. Like, that's great, because obviously if a 16th century person, you know, is in modern life, they would not be cool.
No,
they wouldn't be cool. So it's like a weird balance of switching it on its head, but also making you think, well, yeah, of course vampires wouldn't be cool, really, would they? Like, you'd never be able to see them, they'd kill everyone.
Yeah, I thought there's a good throwaway joke where they give Peter a chicken. And that's only because we had that whole bit on our episode where we're like, with the rooster, the cry of the rooster.
Oh, yeah.
They give him, it's like, I've got you a chicken, just going to leave it there.
I found something for you.
Here's breakfast. Oh, dear.
Peter's great, because he's actually scary. And I thought that was quite interesting to have at least one vampire that is absolutely terrifying.
It's funny, we talked about that a few times, including on our Ghostbusters to answer the call episode, the difference in culture and humor, like US, UK. Here, the thing is, okay, if you have a message to get through, even a nonsensical one like the wage gap, or I recommend to use comedy. It's way more effective than shouting on Twitter. I mean, in there is a line, which is just a line in there. It was not added afterwards. It was just in the flow. If I had a penis, I would have been beaten years ago.
Oh, from the servant. Yeah.
Yeah. Or when Taika dresses as Blade, which is deemed inappropriate. It's just something in there that you would say, oh, yeah, they address cultural appropriation, kind of. It's just those touches that are in the flow, and it's not a message added afterwards, like, yeah, you have that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's that thing with preaching, right? That if you preach to someone, you're trying to convince them. It's like, don't try and convince people straight out the gate. It's like, have a conversation. You're more likely to agree with somebody in a conversation rather than somebody telling you you're wrong, sort of thing.
If you look at the French film that was produced and made by Netflix called I'm Not an Easy Man, Je ne suis pas un homme facile. Even though I'm not agreeing with plenty of stuff in that debate, it's quite well done. And so basically the guy bumps into a lamppost at some point and he wakes up in a matriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is reversed.
Yeah,
very impressive work.
That's interesting. I mean, there's like a one episode on Rick and Morty, isn't there? Where they go into a planet where it's matriarchal. And so they talk about how you would deal with that. Oh, no,
it's like the
Morty animal. And his sister. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like...
But it's another planet, which is just matriarchal. And it's interesting because, of course, that has its problems as well. And no one wants that either because it's about empowering people rather than oppressing the other.
Mm, yeah.
And obviously, if you do it in a creative way, it will... because obviously, if you're preached, you tend to like, yeah, no, just shut up.
Yeah.
Whereas when it's done creatively, even though you do not agree, there are some stuff in life. Like I watched a video a few months ago of a guy the guy is black, but he attends Ku Klux Klan meetings.
Yes.
Oh, I think I know the guy you're on about. Yeah, there's a documentary that he did, right? There's a film.
Now there is,
Yeah.
On Netflix, actually. It is.
Oh, okay, cool.
Is this the Black Klansman? Is it called Black Klansman?
No, that's the Spike Lee.
That's the new Spike Lee movie.
That's a movie. This is the guy who basically wanted to understand why white people would hate him because his color is different. So
interesting.
He was interviewing many people. And I don't remember his name, unfortunately.
I've watched something similar. It's just, I don't remember who did it, but it was a woman, a Muslim woman, doing some interviews with the same group of people, just basically racist in America. And she goes to one guy and she like they get on really well, actually. And then at the end of the section he's in, he's like, yeah, I'm going to stop protesting the mosque.
Oh.
Because, because he has that moment of realizing, like, oh, I got on with this one person. And, you know, that starts your questioning of what you believe. You know, the idea of you have a positive experience with something, and if you hated that before, you're like, oh, maybe, why do I think this sort of thing? So the best way is approaching it civilly. Because if the other half aren't civil to you, it's like, well, I can't go to their level because that's just proving their point, you know?
Daryl Davis.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So there is a TED talk like why I, as a black man, attend KKK rallies.
And yeah.
He's converting them and taking their robe when they're done. One by one, he became friend with the grandmaster 20 years ago. And yeah, they just, he had to hide the fact that he was black when to have the interview with a guy because they really wanted to know how, as I just said, you would hate him just based on the color of his skin. And yeah, they were looking at them at each other a bit weird, but they just talked. And now I don't remember who's alive or not, but Daryl is alive. And they were friends for many years and he still attends. So we talked about that a few times here. If we just talk, it helps rather than shout and just hate without even agreeing to talk.
Okay, yeah, because one of the subtle things in this film is the relationship that the four main vampires have with Stu, the human. Because when Nick becomes a vampire, and he has his brother, I think his brother-in-law is Stu's brother-in-law or something like that. And he brings him in, they're all like, oh, what? Why? And a human? What the hell's going on here? And slowly, he introduces them to the new world with, you know, the computer and the TV. I think it's do they do TV as well? But they definitely do the computer and other things with Stu.
Phone.
The phone, that's it. Like with Skype and stuff like that.
And texting.
Yeah. Oh, and texting, yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot that bit. Yeah, and the whole idea that they weren't open to this idea of a human, but as soon as they let him in, they're like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's pretty cool. And it soon becomes apparent that Stu... When the old drama comes out with Nick, they're really sad to lose Stu more than they are to lose Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because Nick's kind of annoying.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's multiple.
And they blame him for Peter's death, don't they?
Oh, well, it is his fault, isn't it?
Because, it is a little bit.
Because he reveals that he's a vampire to everyone until a vampire slayer comes in.
Yeah, I'm a vampire hunter.
I'm a vampire slayer. It's like, ah.
You're joking.
You're dead, and out of this world. Norma Taniga composed this. Well done.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It was
very nice.
It just made me wonder, is like, what else could you do with this sort of style? Because when we get to there's like a party at the end and we see different factions, that the zombies are all like intellectual men, basically, because they're so old. It's like, I'm a human. Oh, like that. It's like, oh, come on. It's great. And they walk. They don't run. They're the crawly zombies.
Oh, and the French, well, I don't, when the zombies, I watched the English and the French version right after, so I don't necessarily remember the English version in certain bits that were added or not, but when the zombie is presenting two of his mates, like, yeah, be civil, like, say something instead of,
Yeah.
Oh, like, dear.
I hate that's the way that we're portrayed all the time, and we're not that, we're not only,
We're not only brains.
I would like to say there's something annoying that happens with iTunes. Certain films, it's not the case in this one because the French version was really a thing of its own, but you have to buy you have to buy the film twice. You've got the original version with French subtitles and the French version.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So I had to get it twice this one.
That's a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is annoying. When we were in Germany on Netflix and Amazon... If you want the English version, it has to have OV next to the title. So the title will be in French.
Oh,
French,
yeah.
In German. But if it has OV next to it, it means, right, this is the original version.
Yeah, that's how they do it in France.
Also. Right, yeah.
VOST for a version originale sous-titrée.
Right, okay.
Or VF, version right. Française. Mm. Yeah. There is a Vampire's Guide to Wellington. When you can see Taika Waititi, it's 3 or 4 minutes, kind of an informative message like the one they did for airplanes in the Lord of the Rings.
All right, yeah.
It's a nice...
That's cool. That's kind of funny because now we have two things majorly like great from New Zealand where you think Lord of the Rings, you think, oh, New Zealand, or New Zealand, you think Lord of the Rings. But now if I think New Zealand, I'm like, oh, yeah, What We Do in the Shadows as well.
Yeah,
which is good.
Entirely original.
True. Mm-hmm. Although, in a sense, you can argue that the Lord of the Rings thing is kind of its own bundle because it's so different. Because I'm reading the book right now and there's no way. You could not adapt the book word for word. It's too difficult.
No.
I'm reading it like, there's no way you could do this.
Yeah.
I will talk about Les Misérables in the episode we have with Cécile. And,
the other one.
Yeah, it's quite
fun fact, listeners, The Hunchback of Notre Dame is a book written by Victor Hugo as well.
Oh, yes. Just like Les Misérables.
So is Les Mis. It doesn't have songs in it.
They've not all got songs in it.
I thought the BBC thing that they're doing right now, they removed them, but no, they didn't.
Apparently. No, it's an adaptation of the book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh,
but everyone's like, what do you mean? Les Mis is a book? It's like, oh my God. It's that annoying thing of like, when a version does so well, people forget what comes before. Like, let's take Lord of the Rings. Maybe not, because Lord of the Rings was such a successful book, so it's an argument of both. I'm trying to think of something that... Les Mis is the great example going, it's so successful you forget the original version.
No, but you also have a culture of musicals here. We don't in France that much.
True.
So, but I'll talk about that in detail.
Oh, got it. Disney films. So, like, Aladdin, you think, oh, they're Disney films. It's like, no, I mean,
1001 Arabian Nights.
Yeah, the Tales of Arabian Nights, you know, or all the Brothers Grimm stories. It's like, yeah, these were stories before they were Disney films.
Yeah.
You know, so that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the Mowgli is a bit closer to the actual Rudyard Kipling book.
Yeah.
Because you don't have King Louis and stuff that were added by Disney.
It's a lot darker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Disney kind of made everything a little more, I always want to say edible. But it's not edible. It's
Edinburgh.
No. A little bit more universally accessible, you know, in terms of children, actually, or like family. So you're not going to have, you know, Victor Hugo's Hunchback of Notre Dame. I mean, because you've also got the black and white film.
Yeah, true.
So that's a lot darker as well.
Or even in the, to come back to the film, I mean, Nosferatu versus the first adaptation of Dracula.
Yeah.
You know, people forget that, forget about Nosferatu because it's a silent 22 German film.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Well, I'm not hopeful, but I'm curious. So there is an American version of the film that was optioned, and it's being developed as the TV series. A pilot has been ordered by FX, and it will be starting to air in March.
Really?
Yeah. This year.
No. Did I miss what the...
Oh, no. But What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah, like Shameless, US, UK. Like What We Do in the Shadows, US.
Okay.
Interesting.
And there is a trailer I'm not hopeful.
No, because, well, look at In Betweeners. Have you seen a brilliant...
No.
Well, if you haven't seen In Betweeners over here...
Well, yeah, yes.
Watch a bit In Betweeners, because it is pretty funny. It would never get made now, funnily enough.
No, it's a bit un-PC, isn't it?
Yeah, we just live in a different world for comedy now, which is kind of strange. And also the fact that there's a good clip that's scenes directly from, that they've adapted for the American version, because the American version didn't get past like series one, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So they've taken the scene that's in the British version and put it next to the scene that's in the American version. And you could see what's happened. Like, they've just taken the joke, but they've not done anything with it. They think that, the joke worked and they over there, we'll just translate it to over here.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. Like, no. The characters are quintessentially English.
Yeah.
And that doesn't translate over, because, like one of them's, like, you know how we have, like, there's Will's with a briefcase, and their version of Will is, it just doesn't work. You know, there's some things that don't work. Like, the American Office is, like it or not, is different from the UK version, because it had to be.
Yeah,
because you couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's different. It's for a different audience.
Exactly. So... be that as it may, that's why that series lasted so long, because it worked for the audience it was for. You can't take something that was British and think, oh, it worked over there. If we just take that, we can get it to work over here.
I just feel like when something is so universally known and loved, it might have worked in America.
Fawlty Towers never works in America.
Well, that's because it's British, but there are certain things that, like, I feel like What We Do in the Shadows could translate to worldwide audiences.
We'll see if they add jokes, because there are no jokes in there. And they do like jokes in the US, don't they?
The problem is that the version that we have here works everywhere.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Why would you need... The problem is like, why you... You have to ask, why are you adapting something? Are you adapting something because you know it's popular and will make money? Are you adapting something that you think Americans would like, but it would necessarily... we could make it better? And I think the answer to that version is they probably want to make money.
Yeah, I agree with that. Which sometimes goes really well. Like, sometimes they want to make money, but actually it was a really good...
Here's a fun game. Name a version of where the US version is better than the original version, and see if one comes to mind. Because there's plenty of one. I know a lot of people make the argument for the bridge, right? Or no, is it The Killing? Some people say the American version is all right.
Yeah, I haven't seen the...
Oh, right, okay.
The original, but I really liked the American one.
I mean,
but it's not going to be better.
Is Shameless? I don't know. I never saw Shameless.
It depends, because Shameless American might be tailored for American audiences, and so America might really like the American version. But I would say the British version is so much better. So I think it just depends on what your humor is.
Mm.
It's the same thing with The Office. Like, you're not always going to like the original, because it's tailored to a certain type of audience that you're not a part of, but that doesn't exactly mean that everyone's going to be on. Like, I think it's rare to find universally people saying the original is worse than the remake.
Right, so here's a better question. Name a remake that is better than the original.
That's what I just said.
No, I mean in film then. Because I know what you mean, that's the question, because if we're making, if film industry,
yeah,
the year is now, we've just gone into 2019, and although the films for this year haven't majorly been announced, two big ones this year are another version of Pet Sematary and It Chapter 2.
Yeah.
You know, which it's not, well, it's an adaptation more than a remake.
Well, I would say maybe is better than the first one.
That's true. But then again, that's a book, so it's not exactly a remake. They're not remaking the 1990 TV series, so it's an adaptation. But...
Yeah, okay. But I mean, I think the connection still stands.
Yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough.
That I think that in that situation, the remake is better.
Or reboot, even. A reboot.
Whatever.
You know, this whole formula. Has anything been that great?
I've never seen the 1933 or 31, I don't remember, Paul Mooney Scarface, but I really do like the Al Pacino remake.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's another one everyone doesn't remember the original.
No. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, and but the thing with that is it plays on the... Both of them play with the idea of immigrants in a new country. Like, sure. That's what... It just reframes it to a different time period. So,
mm-hmm.
And it works, because the theme works. Yeah. In that sense, which you could argue the remake is better than the original. But it's when the Jungle Book as well, I guess, because it's... But again, it's more like the book. The difficulty is like, where I'm worried about Lion King. That's where my concerns lie right now. We're getting Dumbo, we're getting Lion King, we're getting Aladdin, which have already been done. And the original version is pretty good. I don't know how you top Dumbo. For a film to be that good in how short it is, the original Dumbo, Aladdin... I mean, I didn't really watch Aladdin as a kid, so I don't really have much to say about it. But the songs are pretty timeless, and you know, the genie. How are you gonna top Robin Williams as a genie? And then Lion King. I mean, the original is pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you gonna top these three? It's like the question is: are you remaking these because you think you can do something with it, or are you remaking these for the money? I don't know. I miss original movies. I miss new ideas.
The thing also is these days they tend to add political undertones, clear ones, so they alienate their audience. Like if I would not be surprised to see a Trump hating joke or there was one in Doctor Who, so in any of that
Trump. Really, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, it's probably because quite a lot of people in these medias are left-wing and liberal and
really?
Yeah, totally. So you're kind of gonna have lots of people that are anti whatever. I don't know. I hope that we can just learn from what they did in this film, which is if you've got something that you really believe in, then you can slyly put it in not even like in an obvious way, just like have a joke about it, because
yeah.
That makes it more accessible, and you have, even if you don't believe it yourself, you can have respect for the other side, which actually kind of would be amazing to have at the moment, because if I feel like everything's a bit divisive at the moment.
You're either one or the other.
Yeah, which is kind of bullshit, because we're all human, like there are so many facets to everything, so... Yeah, I think this film did that really nicely to kind of
bring it back.
To that.
Yeah, yeah.
You
good
don't,
job.
You don't feel being shoved stuff in the throat.
No.
Leave me to do my dark bidding on the shadows, internet.
In the shadows.
What are you bidding on? I am bidding on a table.
It's jokes like that. Brilliant.
Yeah.
To bring my point about remakes and reboots, this film is an original thing. It's even if you're arguing like, yeah, it's a remake of a 2005 short, it's like, no, it's a full-length version. It's like what Saw did. They made a short and then they made the full.
Yeah, it's original. I haven't seen a film like this ever.
Well, a lot of people could go, oh, you're just stealing from Spinal Tap. But, I mean...
Or Interview with a Vampire.
Or Interview with a Vampire. But the thing is like, you're taking... I don't believe that. It's like the argument we're having right now in the music industry of people being sued over the same chord progressions. It's like, you can't... I mean, any chord sequence you hear, you're going to go, that sounds familiar. It's like, yes, because melodies, there are certain ways that chords work. It's like a certain progression of notes sounds nicer or reminds you, because your brain goes, I've heard that sort of tone before, oh, that's this. And now you're getting situations of people suing each other because... of using the same chord sequence. Now, when it's valid, it's valid. You know, if you steal somebody's idea, plagiarism exists in all formats, if that happens, of course. But the idea that you just have to be, it has to be super original all the time, or you can't find inspiration from what's come before. It's like you watched, like we said, The Office, This is Spinal Tap, all these things, you take what you saw there, you take bits that you like, and then you use that in your own vision. I mean, that's how you progress, right? And that's how we get films like this. It takes the ideas that were there and uses it in their own funny way to create an original piece of work.
Yeah, which is what this film did, definitely. Yeah.
Which I miss. I miss original films. You know?
I think it's because everyone wants their name on things. So it's like,
oh, if I, that was my idea and that was mine and you took that from me and I need to be featured in validated. Your music video or you're this or you're that and give me some money and my manager and I'll sue you. And all, you know, everything is so like me vs you and that's got to have my name on it. And it's so primal in a bad way. It's like, why are we going back to this? Because yeah, like all your ideas need to progress from somewhere. So like if you have inspiration from something, should I then credit every single film that inspired me? Like Jesus, that's crazy.
It's a great thing in the Mark Cousins book because it's been going for years. Like for example, the thing of it's like a glass and it's apparent in loads of films like in Taxi Driver where he like the glass is fizzy. You know, that's that shot exists in other films because it's a filmmaker paying homage. Because that's what you do. You look at things and you go, that's great. I want to pay respect and do something with that. Look at, to make it about vampires, look at the shot in Nosferatu with the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Infamous. It's nearly enough in every horror film. In some way or form, if you see a shadow on the wall that is bigger than the actual person, that comes from Nosferatu. The joke, like, and comedy exists as well. Like, you see a big shadow, oh my god, it's really scary, and then it's a tiny mouse. Like, it exists. That is an homage. Yeah, we've got behind us the display for An American Werewolf in London.
I mean, that was literally taken from, not taken, sorry. It's an homage to Nosferatu, right? Yeah. Because it's even got the claw.
The long hands. We've got the put on the
in
other
front
side.
Of you. Yeah.
It's always going to be there.
I think
being inspired by a previous person is good. It's not. It isn't a crime. It's what you do with that inspiration and make it your own that makes you stand out. Doing what they did again, not good. Seeing what they did and using it in a way that helps you, different, you know?
I think if you've actually literally taken something from someone, then yeah, you should put their name on it.
Of course,
because
yeah.
That was their idea. But there's a balance between being inspired by something, changing it and making your own to then taking it and then being like, oh no, I'm not crediting you.
Yeah.
Then of course sue them. But like we're taking it a bit too far because if you're talking about, as you said, chord progressions, like this is 2019, like how many musical differences are there going to be? Like there's going to be a point where there's going to be similarities between certain things, especially because in this media, because it's a business, you're going to see something that makes money and then want to redo it again and again and again because it will make you the money back.
Well, that's what cliches are.
Yeah,
cliches are so. In every film.
Yes, stuff are recycled, but sometimes you've got some pieces that feel entirely original, like precisely this one.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, wow, that's quite incredible.
Yeah, it's really nice. And you want to watch it again and you'll probably see different things. And that's kind of what you want in every film or any medium, actually.
Yeah.
Because then you're not just like repeating it in your head. It's like you're watching a whole new film and you can really know and understand a film if you've watched it like 6 times and it doesn't feel stale. And that's an amazing accomplishment, I think. I really enjoyed Thor Ragnarok as well, so.
Yeah, his style is ever present, the whole sort of half real, half the line between reality.
Yeah.
Is really nice with Taika Waititi, actually.
Yeah. And there's like a deadpan humor to it as well, which I think is why I found it more funny than quite a lot of the superhero movies that we've seen. Because there's like a style and a humor that is just, it works and it's so funny. And there's nothing better than watching a film that every like 5 seconds you're laughing.
Yeah.
It's just the most brilliant feeling ever.
In a good way. Not when it's intentionally unfunny. Like,
yeah, The Room. The Room.
Which is funny, which is great.
Too. Yeah, any other film bar The Room.
Yeah, the best worst film.
Like Troll 2.
There are some executives in Hollywood who, well, I think still
are listening
today,
to this podcast.
Who are in their software. The way to get people is to add a sex scene or that kind of stuff. But there are some other ones who, I mean, it's not by chance that Taika Waititi is now doing in the MCU and people notice. One of the biggest example at the time was Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like,
even to bring it back to New Zealand, Peter Jackson was well known for in the film industry before Lord of the Rings.
Brain Dead and all that.
Yeah, all these great horror movies that were really, really good, made on a really tiny budget. Like, he was, there's the reason that he managed to get Lord of the Rings, because people knew that he could make films.
I think what's amazing about something like Lord of the Rings as well is because he was given a huge budget, but he didn't kind of fall into, oh, let's look at the algorithms and see what people enjoy in this film. Like, they researched and they worked super hard on finding what they looked like and felt and the design and landscaping and all these different things that are involved in a film.
I think that's what this year's version of Saw will be. I think we will do both Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series.
Yeah.
But they will...
Oh, right. I thought you were like, let's do it again.
No. I saw your face. They will be months apart, i.e. we'll do Lord of the Rings, we'll watch all the appendices stuff, like the multiple hours of all the stuff, talk about that film, and then later in the year, talk about The Hobbit. Because the point you just made about look at the algorithms will come into play when we look at The Hobbit, and we'll see what happened, and we'll see where it went wrong, and we'll see what happens when you take these two films and look at them independently and together. So they're quite a good idea to look at this year separately with that idea in mind.
I think that sometimes doesn't make a good film, because I'm sure if Taika Waititi and who is it, Jermaine Clement?
Yeah.
If they looked at the algorithms to make this film successful, it probably wouldn't have been, interestingly.
Yeah, of course.
Because it only works in certain parts. Like any algorithm, there are certain times when it doesn't work, and the way to be successful is by going against that and being different.
Well, look at films that, what you're talking about, trends. Algorithms, another way of looking at trends.
Yeah, but also like computer, you know.
I know what you're trying, the idea of like when a film...
The Leave campaign of Brexit.
Jesus Christ. The leave.eu, to be precise.
Yeah, just
the
like
other one, not the one.
Because of course they work, like it's a computer, it doesn't make doesn't make as many human errors as humans do, but you know, that's why this film is so successful in our eyes, because it doesn't follow the algorithms and the trends. Yeah, I mean, either way.
I mean, in trends is the fact, like, let's take a film that, I don't know, I saw today actually that Jumanji's getting a sequel. I was like, oh Christ.
Oh no, really?
It's got Danny DeVito signed on to do this.
Oh God.
Anyway.
Yeah, more Karen Gillan.
We're going on here. We're way off the film.
I brought it back.
Yeah,
I was talking about how it's nice that this film was different, but it kind of subtly brought in, it's kind of like it understood its audience and brought in all the things that the audience would enjoy seeing. Like there's humor, there's deadpan, there's bringing factions together, there are werewolves and vampires trying to get along. Like, but I mean, that's kind of part of it, right?
Yeah.
Like bringing those two worlds together. And also making it more real, because it's like, well, if vampires exist, so do werewolves. And also the little things like how they bump into the werewolf pack, and they've got huge chains on them because it's a full moon and they have to chain themselves. Like little things, it's kind of like, that's genius, but it's so subtly done, and it's nice because it doesn't, again, it's not preachy, but it doesn't, like, push it down your throat, like, oh, this is what we're doing now. It's subtly, they're holding a chain and you yourself make the connection.
The difference between exposition and non-exposition. Like, oh, we're werewolves, we're tying ourselves up because it's the full moon, and at the full moon we become vampires, with full moon we become werewolves and we attack people. You better leave before we attack you. Like, good writing versus exposition.
Exactly. Where they talk about something else and they just have a chain and the audience can then make the connection.
Well,
that's awesome.
Yeah, the whole thing, it's like, why are you wearing jeans?
Yeah.
So you're going to ruin your jeans if you...
Oh, yeah.
Why are you not in your tracky bottoms?
You just
that whole thing.
You just bought this shirt.
You're going to ruin it.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. Anything else? I feel that we're approaching the end point. Anything else we want to say about what we do in the shadows? Or do we think we've covered all we want to say?
It's just really good.
It is really good. It's well worth a watch. And it's not a 2-hour slog. It's a really brisk 1.5-hour movie that you could watch again and again and again, to be honest.
Definitely.
It's got that feel to it. It's got that really fun feel where you could just whack it on and have a laugh every time and probably see new things that you didn't see the first time either. I bet that's ever present in this film too. Okay then, shall I ask?
Yes.
All right, for the first time in 2019, Anouk Jan was What We Do in the Shadows, Good, Bad, or Just Plain Standard. Jan?
You see, I think I now understand why I didn't like I, Tanya that much, because I felt it was too heavy-handed, probably, in the messaging. Whereas here, from the first time a few years back to today, I have an undying love for it. I would say masterpiece, hidden gem, remarkable. Not for everyone, probably, but that's where I am. It's a project that makes me want to have a drink with Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
And talk about his inspirations and comedy and filmmaking and everything.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Excellent. Anouk?
I would say that this is in my masterpiece collection.
Ooh. Anything else? Is that it?
No, that's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
For me, let's think. It is exceptional, actually. And it's very funny that you watch a film the first time and go, this is a masterpiece. Because I remember me and Anouk watched Trainspotting 2 recently, and it's an exceptional film that probably is a masterpiece like the first one. And now that enough time has passed since I've seen it, I can look at it in that way.
Yeah.
But on the first time seeing something, knowing how you feel about how fun this is, I think this is going in my vault, because I can see myself watching it over and over again, and like how Jan has with Empire Records, you could just watch it and watch it and watch it, and I feel that I could do that with this film easily.
Yeah.
So I'll stick this in my vault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here we go.
Definitely. Awesome.
Wow.
Massive shout out to everyone involved with the French version. So I said I would give a few words about Alexandre Astier. So basically, he's a guy from Lyon. He's one of the greatest creative forces in France. And it's not, well, he was not involved in the making of the film. He just did the voice. But he created a while back a series called Camelot, which is kind of a different thing, just like this film is. It's heavily, it's comedy, good comedy, without that many jokes around the idea that it's Arthurians, like in the Grail kind of thing.
So like but Monty Python and the Quest of the Holy Grail?
No, well, not really. They're just all, no, it's not absurd as Monty Python are.
Okay.
It's extreme. The writing is incredible, and it's just that everyone involved is just completely idiotic, incompetent.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of redefined many things in France, and he's also the guy directing the two latest Asterixes.
Oh, right.
Okay. Great. No.
Animation one, the one that was just released, The Secret of the Magic Potion, is an entirely original story, which usually is not possible because you have to see with Uderzo, who is the only remaining alive guy, because you have the albums and you can adapt that.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But the guy loves Asterix so much that he wrote his own story without really...
Cool.
That's awesome. That's
really cool.
Mm. Yeah. Really cool.
You went to see the guy, Albert Uderzo, who said, yeah, the story has not been addressed yet, so let's go.
Lovely.
That's very cool.
And Alexandre Astier posted something about him on Instagram a while back. He plays Arthur in there.
Okay.
And it's, I think only the last season's has subtitles, but it's just like this masterpiece kind of stuff. Like, groundbreaking, clearly.
Awesome.
Do you have anything else to add about what we're doing right now?
No, maybe a couple of new things in 2019. At the end of an episode, if we feel that we have to see it, we will tell you, like, at the end of the episode, see the movie. Like,
definitely.
So this one is see the movie.
See it.
As soon as possible.
Yeah. Or then listen to this podcast again after you'd seen it.
I guess true, probably. So yeah. I don't know if we need to do
and
that.
Also, for once, the French, I actually ordered two of the Blu-rays. I can have my family watch it, which rarely happens, even on the podcast. Like, well, are you doing French version sometimes? Because we don't really understand.
Oh, it's a shame.
Well, they'll enjoy our next episode then.
Yeah.
That'll come. Is that going to be the next one out?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
No, not the next one out. No.
In this month, we will be talking about one of the original coming-of-age movies, which is a French film. So there we go. We finally have
a French film. No, that's not the one.
What?
No. Literally,
what are we doing?
We're doing a cooking thing.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought we were doing 400 days.
No. 400 blows. No, that's not the one we're doing.
What?
No.
Oh, well. Maybe we'll do that some other point. What a disappointment.
Aww.
I really wanted to see that movie. I thought that's what we were going to watch.
No.
All right, okay.
No, that's a comedy we're doing tomorrow.
Okay.
Well, we are later.
Right.
Yeah, because now I ask guests what shaped their being and they give me a title and we're going with that.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. I guess so.
Yeah. So it was...
That'll be an interesting
episode. We can edit that out.
That'll be a really interesting episode because I'll see if I'm prejudiced towards this movie because I'm like, I want to watch something else.
Aww.
Oh, dear. Never
mind. Can do that.
Well, we will be doing that.
Yeah.
That film is pretty good.
Cool.
That'll be a good episode if we do get Mark Cousins on at some point to discuss for sure.
So we were...
Adam.
Anouk.
And Jan. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Good, the Bad, and the Just Plain Standard podcast. If you like what you heard, you can leave us a review via iTunes. If you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Good, Bad, Standard Podcast on both platforms. If you fancy seeing the live streams that we talk about on the podcast, they can be found on youtube.com. You search for Milk in a Wine Glass. There are other bits and bobs on there too, just to see what Jan's up to during the week. And if you really like us, like really, really like us, why don't you head on over to patreon.com/goodbadstandardpodcast and have a look if you want to support us. Any small donation is appreciated.